This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We're talking numbers this week. You've been checking up on the numbers of the South Island Piers, haven't you?
Yep, I have. It's like it's going to be a fun event to play in on the weekend.
How many have they got?
36 tables. I think there could be more. The thing about that, I suppose, is they can leave it open till the very last minute. It's not like you have to run down to the club and put up a few more tables, is it?
Yeah.
Lots of people do like playing online bridge, and of course, financially, it's a lot easier as well, isn't it?
And just because we're talking about the South Island Piers, what's the North Island Piers looking like?
Well, it's a few weeks away, but they've got something like 17 or 17 and a half tables at the moment, I think. A respectable number. There is one other event coming up online too, which is next Friday, which is a public holiday.
Oh, Matariki. Do you have to enter that online too?
You do. There's 24 tables entered for that one. It's going to be a wet, miserable day, which it might well be. Maybe that's a good place to be on a Friday public holiday.
Oh, there's a restricted open one as well. Didn't realise that.
There is indeed. Have you not got your name down yet?
No.
What have you got planned for Matariki?
I hadn't really thought about it. Maybe I will play. Yes. Are you playing?
Yeah, we're playing the South Island Piers. $50 for 2 days bridge. Not bad. I'm just going to compare what the cost of living is in the North Island to what it is in the South Island.
Go on, tell me.
It's $50 for either one.
Ah, right. 2 days worth, though, so 25 a day.
That's not too bad at all, is it? Most tournaments are more than $25.
Absolutely. Like I said, we were talking about numbers. I've been looking up all of these rules or number rules about bridge.
Yeah, I thought your head was going to explode. So, what's this rule of one thing? Can you have a rule of one? Is that even a thing?
Who would have thought that you could have a rule of one? But that's when the opponents have just one trump outstanding, which is higher than yours when you're playing your trumps. You normally leave it out. You normally go ahead and start winning on your long suit. And leave them to trump in and then go back to your business.
It nearly always makes sense just to leave it out if it's bigger than yours. Certainly if you've got trumps in both hands, it does. If you've only got trumps in one hand and you've got a suit that you want to run in dummy, sometimes you have to get rid of that pesky trump just before you lose your last entry up to dummy.
Let's move on to the rule of two.
How high are we going to go?
I tell you what. They go over 40.
40? We could be here till midnight.
But just for this week, we're just going to see if we can get through to number 10. So the rule of two. Do you use this, Barry?
This is quite interesting. I think it was last weekend. Somebody was talking about the rule of two and three. So back in the day, people used to teach their learners this. I got taught the rule of two and three.
Right. Okay, so the rule of two is at unfavorable vulnerability. The recommendation is to be two tricks shy of a two-level contract. In other words, openers should have six tricks to open a weak two bid.
Red means vulnerable. Green means not vulnerable. So that's unfavorable. You're red and they're green. Yeah, the recommendation is to be two tricks shy of a two-level contract. In other words, openers should have six tricks to open a weak two bid.
And then the rule of three is at equal vulnerability. So either all non-vol or all vol. The recommendation is to be three tricks shy of a two-level contract. In other words, the opener should have five tricks to open a weak two bid. Oh.
So it's pretty rare these days to hear about the rule of two and three. We all know that, I don't know whether it's the opposite of inflation or whatever, but preempts, of course, have got weaker and weaker and worse. And the younger you are, the worse they can be. And people are opening week twos on five-card suits and two counts and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Not necessarily recommended. I think the rule of two and three is something that those people would never even think of if they've heard of it.
Well, hang on, because the rule of four comes in at favorable vulnerability. So the rule of two was unfavorable vulnerability. The rule of three was equal vulnerability. And the rule of four is now favorable vulnerability. The recommendation here is to be four tricks shy of a two-level contract.
Well, I've got a recommendation.
What?
When you're at favorable vulnerability, if you're ever going to try something, if you're ever going to do something that's a bit off the wall, if you're ever going to open when perhaps you shouldn't, that's the time to do it. All sorts of good things can happen when you're green against red. All the best stories start. Well, we were green against red, and here I was, third in hand or whatever, and all of a sudden you're opening with who knows what. You're going to psych if you're going to open light, if you're going to do something bad and hope to, there's certainly a lot more room for error when you're green against red.
You're right. All the exciting stories come out. Okay, let's go on to the rule of five. This is a basic one, this is one that we teach our listeners. A player bidding two suits guarantees five cards in their first suit. That's a pretty basic one. Everybody does that self-consciously, I think.
Well, I'm always the devil's advocate. So what about that hand when you're playing Ackle and you've got one spade, four hearts? You know the hand I'm going to talk about. You know it's the Anna Kournikova hand where you've got four hearts, four diamonds, and four clubs, and one spade, and you don't want to rebid no trumps because that promise is about the hand. The old story, we know we're going to tell a lie, so we open a diamond. Partner bids a spade. We knew they were going to, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
And
now
you
we
chuck
rebid
in
the
a
two
club.
clubs. Yeah. Show, and what are we showing?
5-4.
Yeah, we're showing five diamonds and four clubs. So you're always got five in the first suit and four in the second, except when you haven't.
And then it logically goes into the rule of six, which says if you repeat a suit, it should contain six cards.
Oh, I love this. I love this rule. I agree with that rule. You rebid a suit, it shows six plus. Don't tell me it shows only five, it's six plus.
Good. And then I found this other one which said it's called the 6-point rule. The reason why you must always respond to partners one of a suit opener with 6+ points is that partner can have 19 points. Don't be shy. I've only got a measly six count. That's all you need.
Yep, absolutely. That actually. My tip for the week, which I'm going to reveal later,
Ooh.
is something about that. So we'll talk about that later.
Okay, rule of seven.
So the rule assumes play in a three no trump contract. Subtract from seven the total number of cards that declare and dummy hold in the defender's suit. Conduct their lead of the suit that many times. So if you've got seven cards in spades, somebody leads the king of spades, and you've got ace 7-6-2 and in your hand, you've got 8-4-3. How many times do we duck? Take seven from seven.
We don't.
But if you've only got six, say you've got three and three to the ace in one hand and three small in the other,
Yep,
you
you have to
duck
duck
once, don't you?
once.
And if you've got five, you should
You
duck
duck
twice.
twice. Yeah.
Do you know
Okay.
why that is? Do you know the reason? But the reason that you don't hold up when you've got seven cards between the two suits, you're only missing six. Even if they get in, if they've only got four, they can only cash three tricks. So, but if you're missing seven cards in the suit, the reason you want to duck, because if they've led a five card suit and you duck once and take the second round, then they can't get in to run their suit.
That's a good
So
rule
that's
then.
it's a good rule.
Here's one, the rule of eight. If the number of cards in your two longest suits minus your losing trick count equals two or more, and you have at least six high card points, intrude. It means make a bid.
Well, there you go.
So, losing trick count. Can you remind me about that one again?
So basically, that is the top three honours that you're missing in each suit. Now, if you've got a singleton, you can only count it for one as well, if you're assuming a trump suit. So if you've got king jack to five, then you've got two losers in that suit. But if you've got king queen to five, you've only got one. Of the top three honours, how many are you missing? So go through all four suits. But if you've got a singleton, it's only one loser in that suit. If you've got a doubleton, that's only two losers in that suit. If you've got three small, bad luck, that's three.
So, if the rule of eight, if the number of cards in your two longest suits minus your losing trick count equals two or more, and you've got at least six high card points, get in there. That's what it's saying.
I don't know, that seems a bit, for me, a bit complicated to work out. I suppose if I've got a distant five-card suit and six points, it's king, queen, jack to five or more, and I can intervene at the one level, I do it. And yet I know there's people that say, oh, no, I can't intervene. I need 12 points to overcall.
Right. Rule of nine. Oof. This one's yours by the looks of it.
So it works like this. Add the numeric value of the opponent's contract, the number of trumps held in that suit, and if the result equals nine or more, then that player should double for penalties.
Oh, okay.
So if the opponents are in, say, two hearts, and I've got seven trumps.
That's nine. Seven trumps.
If I've got seven trumps, I reckon I probably should. It probably is more intended for higher level contracts. So if they're in four spades and I add that four, the number of trumps in the suit. So if I've got five trumps, I should double. If they get to four spades, you've got five of them, smack it. Okay.
If the result is eight or lower, then the defender should pass or bid.
I guess if you've got a good hand with four trumps, you're still allowed to double them, aren't you?
Yeah.
Even though it might not add up to nine. I think this, this probably is more applicable if the points are sort of roughly even.
We'll be back with the rules just after Judge Julie.
Coming up next, we're heading off to the courthouse. Director, please.
How can I help?
Judge Julie presiding.
Good morning, Judge Julie.
Morning.
Morning. It's the middle of the bloody night.
I'll tell you what, it's warmer up here than it is down there.
Where's up here and down there in this relationship?
North Island, South Island.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I think you're talking about upstairs, downstairs. So we tried to do this question last week, but it didn't happen, so we'll give it another whirl. So partners away with the fairies as usual and opens the bidding when it isn't their turn to open the bidding.
Yep.
The question is, what happens to you if the next hand doesn't accept that bid and it goes back to whoever was meant to be opening?
Yep.
And then it comes to your turn to bid. Maybe you're even the opening bidder and partner tried to open when you should be. I don't know. What happens?
Okay. So first of all, a lot of the laws are based on information flow. If you get information before you normally would get it, so you've got information you shouldn't have, then the penalties for what has happened will be more severe than they would be in other circumstances. So say your partner is sitting south and it is East's turn to open the bidding. But they're really keen, they've finally picked up an opening hand, and we all know how exciting that is after sitting there forever with three counts. And they open, not their turn, it's East's turn, it's their opponent's turn. They're making a bid before their opponent should, but they're always going to be bidding before their partner does. So in this situation, West doesn't accept it, the bidding reverts to East. If East passes, your partner sitting south just bids what they just bid. And life will continue normally with no problems whatsoever.
You always do the easy bits first, though, Julie.
Well, that's right, because then it gets more interesting. If East opens something, then South now has to make a bid that is comparable, that is, that it contains the same or similar information. Most of the time, this is really straightforward for the director. Every now and then, we have to figure out what is or isn't comparable. If you are a playing director, good luck, because seriously, this is near impossible. Yep. You're going to have to stand there and not bid whatever hand it is you're meant to be playing because you just don't have time. However, playing directors generally know what their club members play, so it's a wee bit easier. Most of the time, South will make a bid that is fine and the bidding will continue. However, if South's opened the bidding when North is the person that should have opened, it gets harder. But the new laws, which are very much designed so that we can have something sensible happening and maybe come up with a result that would be normal before anything else, now allows that North can open the bidding if the bid hasn't been accepted. And their partner will now have to make a comparable bid. And if their partner doesn't make a comparable bid, that is South who opened out of turn, they don't make a comparable bid, North will be barred from the auction. And there will be things around lead penalties, around adjustments, around whether you got to a contract you couldn't otherwise get to. There is a lot of stuff that gets looked at later by the director. 90% of the time, everything is simple, all right? And for most of us that play natural systems at clubs, it stays really simple. But because you have information you're not entitled to, there are restrictions on what can happen next with the bidding and also with leads if you end up defending, which is only right because you're not allowed to use information that you should not have, that you have not got through legal bidding or legal play of the cards.
Okay.
Julie, when I went to the director's forum, so now I know everything. Now, this must be Julie's worst nightmare is me having been to a director's forum and forgetting most of what they said.
But I was going to say, a little knowledge is really, really scary.
Well, one of the things I do remember them saying, I can't remember the exact words, but it was something, the WBF had said something along the lines of, in this situation where your partner's a bit out of turn and you've got to make a bid that's comparable, the word they used was liberal. It said that the director should be reasonably liberal in
what we do is we see if we can what comparable bids there would be. If there is some doubt, generally, if you look at what's called a Venn diagram, you know, we have a circle that contains the information that the illegal call has and the circle that contains the information that they now want to make. If they are close, not exact, then the director will in general allow the auction to continue and come back and review what has happened before making a final decision. So as a director, we can say, look, just bid as naturally as you can, and maybe if you're a playing director, this is going to help you quite a bit here. It's got to have the same or similar information. If after the end of the hand, you keep the bidding slip or you write down the bidding if you're using bidding boxes and I look at it later, I will make a decision about what will actually happen at that stage when I got the information. So we are allowed to be relaxed about the ruling, but it still can't be stupid. All right?
Stupid.
Well, yes, I mean, if you have opened 1-0 Trump, 15-17,
yeah,
you can't make any bid that shows approximately 16 points because you've shown a balanced hand. There's stuff where some bids just do not cover what you have done, all right?
But if you've opened a heart, partner opens a heart and you respond 2 hearts,
that's not good enough.
It's sort of close, isn't it?
No, it's not. You're promising 6-9 and partner's already promised you that they had an opening hand. And then they 2-0 Trump's Jacoby. That's close enough.
No, I mean, partner opens a spade. Yeah. And I bid 2 hearts now.
Okay. Not necessarily. Right?
It's close though, isn't it? Isn't it? If you were liberal, wouldn't
in
you
general, say? In general, yes. If I'm playing, that's 10 plus points or 11 plus points, you'd probably allow the auction to continue because it's within the range that a 2-heart call and a 1-heart opener would be the same. But there are situations where it is being liberal is not the same as being right. A partner opened one club and you responded 1 heart, which is 6+ points, that is nothing like showing an opening hand, right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. So some things are yes, some things are no. If we're not certain, but we think it's approximately right, we can allow the auction to continue and look at it later. So liberal is where we think it is generally going to fall within the range and the description of what we think it will be, and we can come back later and double check. But it is not allowing something really different to continue. So liberals are an interesting word, and people will interpret that in a lot of ways, and some of them you and I might have a very big difference of opinion about. But appeal committees are just sitting there in the background waiting to hear all about it.
What would be helpful for them is if they could only see Judge Julie waving her hands around trying to describe a Zen diagram when we've only got listeners, not viewers, right?
Even if I'm in the middle of a crowded room, people don't see me waving my hands around, all right? We need Blair.
I know that's... Alrighty, catch you next week.
I don't know if we're a lot wiser. Ooh, it's interesting.
Okay.
It is.
Thank you, okay. Julie.
Okay, the rule of 10.
The rule of 10, used to double a two-level contract of the ops. Double if the number of winning tricks plus the number of trumps yields at least two tricks. 8 plus 2 equals 10.
Oh, so they need 8. Oh, hang on. Double if the number of winning tricks plus the number of trump yields at least two tricks. Oh, so you might have four tricks, ace, king in your hand, and the number of trumps plus 2 equals 10.
I don't quite understand that one, to be honest.
So if you've got like four winning tricks in your hand, most probably ace, king, or maybe a natural trump trick, you double those, and then you add what the contract is. And for a three-level contract, you need 9 winning tricks and only 1 trump trick.
I don't understand what they mean. What are they saying 8 plus 2 and 9 plus 1 for?
Because it's what? The rule of 10.
Yeah, I get that, but what does it mean? Hey, what are they adding up there? What's 8 plus 8 what?
8 winning tricks. So if you've got 4, you double it to make it 8. And how do you get 9 winning tricks? Maybe we should stop at 9.
I will stop at 9. I think I don't actually understand that one.
All right, listeners, we need your help. Obviously, we struggled with rule 10. So what I need you to do is to have a look yourself, email us in bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com and put us out of our misery. And hopefully, we get to share it next week. Welcome back to Peter Hollins. He has his number one misuse convention coming up next.
G'day, it's Pete here, and today I wanted to talk about misused conventions. And number one on my list of misused conventions, some people might not actually think this is a convention, but it kind of is takeout doubles. So takeout doubles get misused all the time. And one of the key ways that I see people misusing them is that it might go something like one diamond double, and they've got a doubleton in one of the unbid majors. So people double on hands that they would have opened and they don't know what they should be bidding with them. So like if they've got, say, 13 points and a balanced hand, and they happen to have a doubleton spade, they just double because they don't know what they're actually meant to do. Whereas that is not what you want to do. You can just pass on hands. There are hands that you would open that have no appropriate overcall. Don't make takeout doubles on them just because you don't know what to bid. The correct thing is typically just to pass on those. A mistake that I see a lot is people making takeout doubles when they've got a doubleton in an unbid major, which can cause a lot of grief and can get really, really awkward. Secondly, they tend to follow it up with when their partner bids something like a spade, which happens to be their doubleton, and then panic and then bid a no trump, which would then show a really strong hand, which they don't actually have. So this is a common mistake that they see, and then they try and compound it whenever it works badly. So firstly, with takeout doubles, don't make them with a doubleton or shorter in an unbid major. It'll work out really poorly, unless you are intending to show one of those power doubles and show a strong hand later. The second way that takeout doubles are misused are people don't know how to respond to them. When your partner makes a takeout double, they've effectively said, I have all of the suits, and you're trying to support them. So if you bid at the one level, you aren't showing a good hand, you're showing a weak hand. Whereas you can jump with strength or good distribution because you're effectively supporting your partner. Whereas most people tend to just respond at the one level, and it can get awkward because they might miss games because they didn't know how to respond to them. Also, they might not know that if you've got an invitational hand, you can bid two diamonds to say, tell me more information. Let's start a conversation. I've got an invitational or better hand. Another thing that people misuse with take-up doubles is that they feel like they have to have 4-4 in the majors. You are not promising precisely 4 cards in every unbid major. You are showing at least 3 cards in all the unbid suits. you are not promising precisely four cards in the unbid majors. Partners, when responding, tend to focus on them, but it doesn't mean that you have to have that. You're promising that a major will be a playable spot, and for that you need at least three cards in that. And then the final way that I think people misunderstand takeout doubles might be an auction like this, where it's gone one diamond, double, two diamonds, pass, pass, and you make another double. Understanding what the subsequent doubles actually are. And this is just still takeout, but with extra value. So if you double and then double again, it doesn't switch from I had a takeout double to I have a penalty double. It just says I had a better takeout double. Please bid on. I've really struggled to find a spot where we make a takeout double and then it swaps to it being a penalty double without the auction escalating really, really high. So if you double and then double again, it's still takeout, just says I've got a better hand than what you'd expect for my initial takeout double. Please actually bid something. Anyway, they were my top five misused conventions. Number five was Minerwood. Number four was Roman Keycard. Number three was Two Club Game Force. Number two was Michael's Q-Bids. And then we finished it off with takeout doubles.
Barry's digging into his hat of tricks.
Ah, you've been waiting for my tip.
I have been.
So my tip is that giving preference doesn't show any extra. You find a bid with your 6 or 7 points, but partner opens the one suit and bids another one, and we want to put them back to their first suit because our first suit is nearly always our longest. In fact, we should assume if partner opens two suits that they are longer in the first one than they are in the second one. So putting them back to their first suit, people say, oh, I don't want to take two bids. I only had 7 points. But that second bid didn't show any extra. So if partner opens a diamond, and we bid a heart, and partner rebids a spade, putting partner back to two diamonds doesn't promise any extra. It's still only showing 6 to 9 points. If we had extra, we would jump to three diamonds.
Yep.
Or 10 to 12 points. And if we had more than 12 points, we'd do something more.
Could you chuck in a one no trump bid, or do you actually have to pick?
No, you don't. Quite right. You could bid one no trump there, and that doesn't show any extra either. It's still only 6 to 9. If we had 10 to 12, we'd probably jump to two no trumps. But my point is, putting partner back to their first suit doesn't show any extra. You are just doing your duty as a good partner. Partners like you to put them back to their long suit. They won't say, oh, you've only got 7 points. What are you putting me back to my long suit for? Because that's where you want to be, partner. That's why. Giving preference doesn't show any extra.
And there you have it. From the mouth of Barry Jones. Okay,
that's
catch you next week.
Episode number 300 and something.
304.
We've only got 96 to go to get to 400.
No. All right, we'll take care and we'll see you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.